Welcome to the Wing Life Podcast, where we talk about wing foiling and the lifestyles of those who enjoy this great sport. Well, quite the honor to sit down and chat with you. Nice to see you again. We'll start off with that.
Good to see you too, Luke.
Nice. How did AWSI turn out for you guys?
It went pretty well. Being out in the parking lot, we did a lot better than we thought we would. We got quite a few masts on the water. A lot of people got them on the water. A lot of people liked them. So we had some buzz. And since then, we've been rather slammed.
Yeah? Okay.
So, oh, yeah. We've been pumping about 50 masts a week out.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Pretty happy about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Especially being late season.
Nice. So how's Maui treating you?
Maui's always good. We've started seeing some winter swells, which is nice. We're starting to see some bumps. And in true Maui form, we get some bumps and wind goes away. So it's been made for some interesting days.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt.
Trying to milk it and not end up on the rocks.
Fair enough. So where are you sailing?
Most of the time in the winter, I mostly go to Kaw.
Okay.
Just a little bit of a buffer there. And the sail waves get kind of outside, so you have a chance to get out to them. When I just got back here, mostly was at Kanaha at Uppers. So it's by the right place to have waves or doing downwinders.
Windsurfing or getting on that wing ding?
I'm pretty much strictly winging these days. I had to get the knee replaced a couple years ago, so my windsurfing days are numbered.
Oh, really?
I can still windsurf, but I'm not allowed to jump.
Okay.
And I don't know why I would windsurf if I couldn't jump.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Don't want to mow the lawn.
No, I guess not. But how's winging then there? I've heard some spectacular things about winging in Maui.
Winging in Maui is really good. There are some really great wave spots that aren't too treacherous. I mean, they still are sketchy. But just it's a really good winging environment. Kanaha all the way down through Pier 1 is really good winging conditions. If you want to be brave, you can go chase some really big stuff at Ohokipa, that type of thing. But I'm also learning why the guys that chase that stuff do not have leashes on their wings. And I had a big hole down yesterday from that. So.
Oh, yeah? Oh.
Oh, yeah. It's when the wing gets trapped in, head high plus white water, it just starts dragging you.
Oh.
It's going to keep dragging it until it finally comes loose. It's not like a surfboard or something that pops out eventually. And I was, that's a long hold down.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, that got my attention. I was like, okay, now, oh yeah. These bigger days, I may start going without a leash.
Oh, yeah, I guess everybody. Board leash as well, or are they cutting that too?
No, board leash I'm okay with. The board doesn't pull that hard. It's not much different than a surfboard,
Okay.
But the wing leash kind of, like I said, it just kind of gets tumbled and tumbled and held in the white water. Just, you're getting dragged about a foot underneath the water and there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, yeah. Eh. Yeah, I guess Reese from Ocean Rodeo was developing this new release system. And I hadn't... Yeah, I think they're just starting to use that on wings and they're going to make it so a lot of brands can carry that. Does that make sense?
That'll be...
Yeah, that'll...
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. So, while I was getting dragged, I was like, okay, how am I going to get this leash off my wrist? There's no way I'm going to do it.
Oh, because your other arm's just flailing back, right?
Well, even it's strapped on your wrist and even if you have Velcro, it's not going to come over your hand easily and... Like, this isn't a good situation.
Holy shit. How long were you down for it,
It must have been 3 or 4 days, but now I was probably about 30 second hold down, which is a long one.
Okay.
It was long enough that I was like, okay, I need to relax more, so I'm not consuming oxygen as much.
Yeah. You had to think about it.
And just kept hoping that wing would pop out of the white water.
Well, it's good for us to know because it's not really something that, for those of us who aren't in whitewater as often and get a little antsy and excited about it, I think all these are new problems or new things that we got to keep in mind.
Yeah, it was about a year or so ago, a couple of the hotshot F1 guys were out at the other end of the island in some big conditions. And I saw some video from there and one guy got munched and just threw his wing up in the air. And I was like, wait, why isn't he running a leash? And now I'm kind of understanding why he's not wearing a leash.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, I think once it gets much over, head and a half, and especially areas where you have a lot of white water, definitely a good idea to be leashless, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. Good to know.
And become a better swimmer.
Yeah. That's on the to-do list.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, hey, can we take a step back into history and talk a little bit about how all of this got started?
Sure, of course. I started innovative composite engineering, ICE, back in 1990. I was born and raised in the Midwest, was living back in Indiana, been a windsurfer, I hate to say this, but I think since 1978.
Hey, good for you.
You think I was better than I should be, but I still suck. But I learned very early on in Lake Superior how to windsurf and kind of kept chasing that all my life. And got up to the gorge a couple of times in the mid-80s. And just kind of over time, you know, through some work changes, this and that, I finally just decided, how are I going to be able to start my own company? And so in doing so, I kind of decided where I wanted to be, which was the gorge made a lot of sense at the time. I moved to Hood River. Half of downtown is boarded up, and I was able to rent 5,000 square feet for $50 a month.
Whoa.
It was a great place to start a company.
Oh, yeah.
And so I basically moved there, started the company. The intent of the company was to build composite parts and use some of the technology I knew from my previous history working in an industry to bring higher-end composites down market. And windsurfing, the non-limit side came about mostly because I was out of masts. I broke my last mast, and I need a mast. I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to be a composite guy. I should just make my own mast. And so I got a tool and made a couple of masts, and so I keep sailing. So I keep being a bum.
Dude.
And then guys on the beach are like, what is that? And I talk to them about it. They're like, well, can you make me one? I'm like, sure. So I go and make masts at night and sell on the beach for beer money during the day. And that's kind of how No Limits really started to get a name and start happening.
Oh, wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
But the real start of the company was mostly building antennas for cell phone broadcast.
Good.
That was the first real work that we got. And that was just in 1990, 91, just when cell phones were starting to become something real. And we built hundreds and hundreds of thousands of 10-foot-long two-inch diameter tubes for cell phone broadcast for many years.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, really good at making tubes and making masts. And then slowly, over time, we branched out into aerospace and military and all sorts of other fun things, interesting things.
Yeah, because I was just checking out your website, and you got a bunch of different categories and cool categories under recreational, too. Like, it's not just windsurfing or now winging. It was also biking and some other things, too, right?
Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff in the bike industry over the years. Way back in the day, we worked with Specialized on their first carbon bikes. Worked with Trek way back in the day on their first carbon bikes. Have set up several carbon fiber bike manufacturing operations. Guru Cycles was one we set up back in the day and built all their stuff. Independent Fab, IF, we built their carbon stuff. Parlay, on and on. Most recent thing in biking was we were doing all the Argonaut frames for a few years until we finally transitioned all that stuff to them. We got them to make their own frames on it, which was kind of nice. We've never made a, I don't think we've ever made a set in bike industry.
Okay.
But we've had enough on it.
Oh yeah, I guess it would be. So how did you kind of gather that knowledge initially? Was that...
Engineering. I've got a BS in mechanical engineering. My master's work was at composites. One of my first jobs was doing spar armaments for the Bradley M1s. So that was early composite stuff I was doing back in the mid-80s.
Okay.
And then also worked on the F-16 program and some composite stuff and some various things.
Oh, wow. How was that back in the day?
It all came from just being a windsurfing bum. That just came from being a windsurfing bum, like, play with, you know, string glue, so.
And then the No Limit Skinny 340 was born.
The Skinny. You want history in the Skinny?
I would love history in the Skinny before we get into winging.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the winging podcast is on windsurfing.
Yeah,
right,
but
now
we're going to be windsurfing right now.
Yeah. The Skinny came about, I think, in 92.
This episode is brought to you by Saladita Kite School in La Ventana, Mexico. If you caught some of our stories yesterday on Instagram, you'll have seen that I just got in a couple epic days of downwinding. We got a 10-kilometer downwinder done with my buddy Mickey from Salt Spring Island. Today, I got in an epic one with my friend Britt. We went from La Tuna all the way to the beach and back. Heck of a fun time. If you're looking to learn, there's nothing better than getting a lesson from the pros at Saladita Kite School. They are positioned at La Tuna, and now that I've been here a little while, I've gotten the opportunity to visit to a couple different spots. It is one of the more beginner-friendly beaches with some nice sand, so you're not walking on any rocks. They do offer professional jet ski-assisted kite and wing foil lessons. So once again, they're at La Tuna, so if you want to grab a beer after, grab some ice cream, grab anything, it is a nice little hub there, so you're not just stuck kind of in the middle of nowhere. So they have you covered if you want to learn to kite, foil, or looking into downwinding. They got top quality gear as well. So don't hesitate. Book your lessons today by visiting saladitalaventana.com or send them a message on Instagram at Saladita Kite School. At Saladita Kite School.
There's an individual down in Australia, George Greeno. Interesting character. Had been building all of his own gear for years. Had really kind of wild, like, hall-shaped boards he made that were, like, 6 feet long. And he, like, ground his own fins out of stainless steel. And just, I mean, George is a really neat guy. And he decided he made his own sails, or also made his own mask, because he wanted his own kind of weird banker thing.
Yeah.
And to make masks, he just took a piece of plastic, you know, plumbing pipe and started laying up on it and grinding it down to get the bends he wanted.
Yeah.
And so he built a bunch of masts that way. And then there was a wildfire or brush fire down there that kind of wiped out all of his windsurfing gear and burnt all his masts up. And so he got a hold of us and got a hold of me and said, hey, you know, I need some more masts. And he kind of explained to me what he had been doing. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. He's like, yeah, but you know, you make me some masts. I just don't want to deal with all this headache and stuff again. And so I looked at what he'd done, which was kind of a smaller diver thing that he'd done, all straight and weird. And I kind of stepped back and looked more at the basics from an engineering standpoint. And if you go back to the early 70s when the windsurfer was designed, the developer of that whole thing, he developed the bend curve he wanted and the stiffness he wanted. And he gave that to an engineer who then designed a mast, tapering mast out of fiberglass based on the mechanical properties of fiberglass. And so that's how the traditional mast came to be. It was designed from the start to be a fiberglass mast. Over our history as windsurfers, we started adding carbon fiber into masts and making carbon masts. And in the, you know, mid-80s, a lot of the carbon masts were out there coming out. And all these guys doing carbon masts are just copying the exact size and diameters as the mast that was built in fiberglass. And since carbon fiber is much stiffer than fiberglass, they had to go thinner and thinner walls to make them bend right.
Oh, yeah.
And that also then led to more and more masts breaking and snapping all the time. I mean, back in the day, back in the early 80s, the tank of all masts was the Ampro Gray Wave. I'm not sure if you even know what an Ampro Gray Wave is, but it was a fiberglass mast that weighed 10 pounds and it was indestructible. But it was a beast and it was all designed around fiberglass. And so I looked at all that data and we'd done the same thing, making no limits masts. You know, we used the same diameters and we knew from making different masts, you know, either a 3 pound raised mast or a 5 pound wave mast, we knew what was strong, what wasn't, what wall thicknesses worked, what didn't. And so I kind of just went back to the drawing board, took the properties of carbon fiber, the stiffness and strength of carbon fiber, kind of the wall thicknesses we knew worked well for strong mass, and did the engineering from scratch. And that's what actually ended up being the diameters that ended up being skinny.
Wow.
It was a much smaller diameter mass because the material stiffer. So we had to go smaller diameter to get the bend right. I made a couple compromises in there because we had to make it work with existing windsurfing gear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had to make it work with base of them booms. And so I actually increased the diameter of the base a little bit so it would fit inside of a standard windsurfing base, the right. And then in the boom area, I actually came up with the shim material that we could buy. So I made the diameters of the mat, the boom area, the mast to work with that shim so it would work standard booms. And that's kind of how the diameters all came about. And it was different than what George wanted, but it was close enough that he said, yeah, it'll work for him. And so we made a tool, made the first mast, first four masts, bent them. They bent good. Everything looked good. And we had a machine we built back in the day that we used to break masts for seeing how strong they'd be. And it basically would put a mast, you know, we're mounting the machine and just start pulling off. There'd be this big curve, right? They'd finally bend enough, they'd blow up. And the machine we had, it had about a 5 foot stroke. And most masts would, like a race mast would be about 2 feet of stroke, or blow up. Most of the good wave masts we made were about 3.5 feet of stroke, they'd blow up. And at that point, I mean, you're talking, you know, 3-4 feet of bend in the mast. And so we threw the first four masts, the first couple skinnies on there, ran that whole thing, completely compressed it. The mast just sat there. This huge hoop just sat there, like, oh crap. So we released that and we modified and put some pre-bend in the mast, even further and further. Fired at the point that the ends were only like 2 feet from touching before it finally blew up.
Wow.
We're like, wow, this is way stronger than we expected.
Wow.
And so that's kind of, so we're pretty happy about that, good strength. The next big one was we didn't know what we're going to do to get sail makers to work with us. Because, of course, a skinny mast made a different sail. At least we thought it did. I actually took the first mast, or first full mast we made, went out on a dawn patrol session and used them in just the sails I had, which at the time were some Waddells, I think. And I was shocked. The sail felt the same. It didn't sail any different. Other than I'm also out there and, you know, on a big day and the, you know, it's a hatch on the 3 pound mast instead of a 5 pound mast.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow, this actually feels okay. It seems to work. And a couple guys I know that will remain nameless showed up and they asked what that was. I gave one of them one of those masts and told them to go out and break it. And they went out there and just pogoed it and pogoed it and pogoed it. Just under rotating forwards over and over again. Could not do anything to it, including actually doing an endo into the rocks.
Wow.
At the point. Yeah, that was. That's what I'm saying. This person here remained nameless.
Fair enough.
Wasn't the smartest move ever. But they couldn't break it. And so I was like, okay, this seems to work. And went over to Hood River and went to see a couple of sailmakers I knew and took the mast with me then to them and showed to them. They're like, oh, this will never work. I said, well, can we rig it up and look at it? And got them to rig it up. And they're like, you know, this thing looks fine. It looks great. So at that point, we're like, okay, I think this thing's going to work even with standard sails. And that's kind of how the whole thing came about. George himself, he wants some different curves, some weird curves. We made those weird curves, shipped those down to him in Australia, and he still sails those to this day. And we started making the skinny mass.
Oh, no way.
And at the time, we made pre-preg mass, and Power Ups made pre-preg mass. And I knew that the other mass company, the big dog in the room, was going to come out and combat this immediately as soon as they heard about it. So I actually sent all the design work to PowerX. Said, here, guys, let's both show up to the show with these masks at the same time. And that's what we did. So I gave them all the design work. They actually copied the masks exactly. And we showed up at the next trade show in 92 with our No Limit Skinny, and they had their PowerX version of it.
Oh, that was smart.
So it generated some. There's two companies doing it, not just these new guys on the block.
Yeah, fair enough. And PowerX was, like, out east here, PowerX was carried by a lot of people.
Oh, PowerX made a great product. Still know the principals from that company well, and they're great people. They did really good stuff.
Oh, wow. So that was a good ripple then into the industry?
We definitely changed the industry a lot, yes. I mean, being that you're a windsurfer, you know that about every mast out there now, they reduce diver masts, and that all happened with us doing the skinnies. And we definitely changed the industry over time.
Did you think that starting ICE there and would lead to such a big, that's Hall of Fame stuff, man.
Yeah, that'll never happen because of who controls the windsurfing Hall of Fame. You can look that one up offline and see what that's all about.
Oh, wow. No, that's pretty cool, though. And then, so just sticking on those masks for a second. So all the thickness and how it was built, all that stuff and bend curves, all that just came with how you wanted the sails, how you found the sails would perform. So you would just then customize how you built that to just confirm performance.
Just tweak the layup and tweak where the material was, change it, bends, all that stuff. And, you know, back in the day, there was flex top and costly curve mass. That was it. And then a bunch of sail makers started coming out with what they wanted their own stuff to be. Dave Ezzi was probably the first one who really did that. And so then we worked with Dave and made Master Dave. Then we worked with, Jason and made Master Koya and so we made custom bends for those guys, what they wanted. And we still do that to this day with some sail companies out there, sailmakers, we make custom bends for them. That's what they want, we make them for them. We just tweak our design and dial in the bend and go. And it's actually pretty cut and dry now. It's pretty easy for us.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt after all that time. That's pretty cool.
It's all just an Excel spreadsheet. You just plug and play, and it just gives you the answers. Yeah.
So are you making masks then for a bunch of the major windsurfing manufacturers? And we're going to get into winging in a second, but...
For a couple? Just a couple we do these days, yeah. Like everything, everybody starts going offshore to get things cheaper.
Okay.
And so that's what there's several brands out there we've supported in the past have gone offshore and they're getting them made cheaper out of Asia. And of course those masks aren't as durable as what we do. But that's okay. Because as we discussed earlier, that's one of the biggest mistakes we made with our masks. They're too durable. They last for way too long. And, when you have people come up to you on the beach asking if they should replace a 20-year-old mast, you're like, yeah, dude, replace the mast. Like, why? Is it going to break? It's like, no, I want to buy a six-pack next month. Come on, buy another mast.
Come on, man.
Keep us in business here.
Prices have gone up.
Yeah, exactly. Six-packs, $8 these days. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
And
And especially if you're, I guess you're based out of the States. For us Canadians, it's even more with the exchange rate and whatnot. But
yeah, that hurts.
It does hurt. Okay, so when did you start venturing into making masts for winging?
Winging, I think we're probably 4 to 5 years now.
Yeah,
I can't even remember. It's been a while. I lived in the Gorge from 1989 onward. You've been to the Gorge. It's one of the most spectacular places you'll find in the world in the summers. The winters are brutal and can be very brutal. And so my wife retired about 9-10 years ago. And after a couple of years, she's like, I'm not staying here anymore in the winters. This sucks. She was a pilot, so she was always off flying. So she never noticed how bad the winters were.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've been coming to Maui a lot. We've been coming to Maui for several weeks a year since 1990. And so we decided what the hell we're going to move to Maui in the winters. So we made the move here in the winters. Ken Winter is a good friend of mine. I've been friends with him for 30 plus years. And he was way into the wing thing, obviously. Still was way into the wing thing. And so he kept bugging me that I should try winging. And I kept telling him I was still a windsurfer. And finally, when there was no wave but wind, and I was just bored to death because I mentioned I don't like to mow the lawn.
Yeah.
I finally got some gear from Ken and started winging, and that was probably about 4 years ago.
Yep.
And kind of figured out the whole wing thing, and then I picked up some gear from a company that will remain unnamed, and first thing I noticed was how bad the mast was. The mast was just a noodle. The foil wanted to go wherever it wanted to go. I'm trying to learn how to tack and jive, and go to tack or jive, and the thing just hesitates and then pops. Like, this is stupid. And so that's why I kind of decided, okay, I'm just going to make a mask. I did some research and everything out there was pretty badly done. The attitude at that point in the industry was the mask doesn't matter. Only the foil matters.
Actually, I also heard that some people were saying that the whip was on purpose, that it was supposed to help you power up into corners.
Yep, I heard that one also.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but I don't like the fact it's unpredictable. And I'm doing a bottom turn, I don't know when it's going to hook up and if it's going to hook up.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I don't want to get munched.
Nope.
Yeah. And so that's kind of how it started. We actually, initially, we tried to work with a couple of the OEMs. We actually did OEM masks. Well, we did masks for them for demo purposes, and they liked them a lot, but never kind of came to the table because we manufacture in the U.S. We're always manufacturing in the U.S. We're not going to send anything offshore. That's just not my game. And they didn't want to pay the money for it. They want to buy, they can buy something for one third the price out of Asia, and they want to make sure they have made the margins on it. So that kind of, we went down that path for about a year plus until we finally just said heck with it and came off No Limits.
Okay.
And did ourselves. And so.
Pretty good reviews on those things so far.
V2 is doing very, very well. V1 was a good mask, solid mask. We had some issues early on with some adhesive, which was, that's a whole other story I can't get into too much, but a major company that builds rockets kind of freaked out when we found out about an adhesive that we thought was all safe. Didn't like salt environment.
Okay.
And so we had some issues there, and we took care of everybody. We made sure that they were at new masks. Made sure anybody lost their foil, we replaced their foil, we took care of people.
Okay.
And that's coming from the windsurfing side, we know everything's our reputation. We want to make the best gear we can, and if some, stuff breaks, people are always going to break things. It's how you take care of people when they break things.
Yeah, that's true, actually, because one of the guys that I know that owns a store on Vancouver Island there, he'll just come out and say, oh yeah, their warranty program is amazing, or their reputation is this. And then, so they'll, and all the stores do this, they'll just gently steer you because they know they've been dealing with every manufacturer and every brand, and they're like, what happens if something happens? And you're like, oh, okay, sure, I'll go this route. So what you're saying matters. Yeah,
you can pay once or you can pay a lot of times.
That's true.
And the mask has done well. They're light, they're stiff. My biggest concern with V1 when we did that design was getting stiffness out, and especially the torsional stiffness, because I hate it when the foil is just doing its own thing. That didn't work for me. I wanted to make sure I was in control of where it was going, not it in control of me. I'm old enough now, I don't like getting munched by waves.
I don't think any of us do.
So,
yeah, that's true.
In my younger years, it didn't bother me as much. Now it hurts a lot more. So that was a big part of that. And our V1 mask, it was light. Torsionally, the stiffest thing out there. Bending stiffness was good, and not as stiff as a Axis aluminum or something, which we got feedback from some of the surf guys that, hey, it'd be nice to have a little bit stiffer. But as we went into V2, that was a big part of the focus, is making sure we addressed the areas we needed to address with the design.
Okay. So one thing I read, obviously, and I'm just learning more about this, even though I'm on the show, I still look at myself as a bit of a novice, but so there was obviously flex and then rotational flex and then ventilating as well.
Ventilation is the biggest one, in my opinion.
Okay.
That is the single most important thing on a mask to me. And our V1 mast, if the surface finish wasn't right on the money, or if it got some oil on it, like you put on sunscreen and then grabbed your mast, that would cause some ventilation issues with it. And ventilation is just no fun. And so that was my number one focus for the V2 design, was eliminating ventilation as much as possible.
So what is that for people that don't know?
Ventilation is basically, as you're going through the waves, you're hitting chop and different sides. So you're getting little pockets of air inside the mast. No matter what you do, you're going to get these little pockets. And when a mast ventilates, it actually sucks that air right down the mast to the foil. And then just drops out from under you like it didn't exist.
While the foil is under the water.
And
So
basically air gets sucked down the mast to the foil.
Oh.
And if the mask can reattach flow rapidly, that won't happen. If the mask cannot reattach its flow once it separates, then it gets sucked down. And it's a problem that, a lot of brands have or have had. And there's ways around it. There's ways to fix it. And there's some brands out there that try things like putting fences on it so it can't suck down. And that's kind of funny to me, because as soon as you take and heel your mask over at all, you now have another lifting body you're dealing with, which isn't controlled. And I have other new issues, and So people have tried different things and tried different tapers to stop it, and but it can be designed out, I don't know, hydrodynamically. It just takes a lot of work. But yeah, so if you're falling along and all of a sudden your whole floor just drops out from under you for no good reason, you don't know why, it's probably a ventilation.
So that's a mast issue.
Yeah, but usually it's a mast issue. It's also something that happens, you know, if you're breaching the tip of your foil, and some masts will breach a tip and behave, and some foils you can breach the tips and they don't notice. Other foils you breach the tip and everything goes to hell. That's actually a foil ventilation, then, sucking air down the foil. But some don't have an issue with that. They can breach tips all day long, and you know, look like a rock star, and really mostly the gear and just having the guts to go for it. On that case,
so. Yeah, no, my V1 does not do that. But I think the next foil I buy will probably perform a little bit differently. But
like I said, on the V1, the big thing we had was just surface finish, and if the surface finish wasn't right, they were ventilating. That's why we kept telling people just wet sand with some 400 or 600 grit, and the problem goes away. And that fixed on a V1 all the time. But you don't want to have your customers wet sanding their masks, you know.
Mm. So. Actually, I had George on from Delta Hydrofoil out in New York State there.
Yeah.
He mentioned the same thing about foils, that a lot of the time you should be doing the same thing because the finish throws off and there's some properties and stuff that happen.
Very much so. And the light wet sander also gives you like a little micro trip layer at the surface and actually keeps the water attached better to the foil.
Okay. Good to know.
If you really want your stuff to work really great, you know, wet sand at 600 grit and wet sanded opposite the direction of flow, so along the length of things, because you want these little micro trips. Got a little bit of turbulence on the surface, and then it just keeps everything in adhesion.
And that will do what for somebody? You see my blank stare.
it will make things work just a touch better.
All right, fair enough.
For somebody like myself, I don't know this.
Okay.
but if you want to be the fastest guy on the course and the ultimate in performance, that's how you get there.
Okay.
You know, guys like King to Wild Racing, they're constantly just really tuning their gear to make sure it's absolutely perfect that way. That's not me. I'm actually embarrassed how bad my foils look from how many times they hit reefs. So my foils look horrible. They're just hammered all the time. I never do anything about them. I just ride them that way. I don't care.
Could you tell us what you're riding?
Currently, mostly riding is Kuma 980.
Okay.
I just really like that foil. It's a really surfy foil, and with some tweaks to the angles and cane tail I'm riding, it's a really fun foil. It's still fast and glidey. You can get rid of the funky stall characteristic that they had straight out of the box. And it's a really fun foil.
And you're riding the V2?
In fact, if anybody out there hasn't... Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But if anybody has a Takuma 9A they want to get rid of, I'm happy to buy it from them. I'm happy to have spares. I love that foil.
Oh, awesome.
And it's funny because there's a big crowd of Takuma 9A that you see on the water around here from people that have loaned my gear to, and they're like, oh my God. They kept... But yeah, that's what I'm currently riding.
Okay.
But also, I've been playing with the F1 skates, and those are pretty sweet. I like those a lot too. But I'm a wave guy. I'm not worried about the ultimate glide. I'm not a high aspect guy. I'm strictly about chasing waves and getting turned. So.
Oh, that's fair.
There's so many different disciplines here, you know.
Yeah. No. Fair enough. And if we're on the winging train, can we talk about how a winging mast is made?
Oh, we just sew some string glue into a mold, and it comes out perfect. what we are doing is we're actually everything we do is with what's called prepreg, so the resin is pre-impregnated into the fibers. We don't do any wet resin work of any sort. I swore that stuff off when I started the company. I've done lots of years of wet resin, and it's not the way to make a part. It's just hard to control. So we strictly use prepreg. We actually are making a hollow section. So we have an inner tool and an outer tool. We're doing that because if you have something bending, a beam and bending, the center of the beam does nothing for bending. It's a neutral axis. So having material down the center of having and bending is just wasted material, wasted weight. And in our case, since we're building everything in the US, it's wasted money, you know, having people lay that stuff up. And so we actually have an inner tool and an outer tool. We lay the material around the inner tool. It goes into an outer tool, all compression molded together. And then that pops out of the mold. We pull the inner pieces up and left for the hollow mass section. With prepreg, we need heat and pressure to cure it. That's the problem with the material. And so we cure all the stuff in big presses, big high tonnage presses, put about 150 PSI in the laminate on the material itself during the cure, and cure them at about 280 degrees Fahrenheit. And so then that pops out the raw mast. From there, it's sanded, finished, you know, graphics are applied, paint's applied. We are using a aluminum base plate. We're doing that on purpose. I'm a really bad pro and foiler. I'm trying to become better. My goal for this winter is actually become a decent, to go from really bad to just bad pro and foiler, I guess, is my goal.
Good first step.
Decent's not even, I'm trying to get there. But in that, and also in, you know, downwinding with supports and all that, the drag at takeoff is a pretty big deal. And so the bigger your base plate is, the bigger your area is that base plate. That's a lot of drag in the water. You know, people talk about foiling. When you're up foiling, that all goes away. But on your getting started, it matters. And so we've actually gone to a metallic base plate on purpose because we can make it thinner and tighter than we could a composite base plate. We are playing with some composite base plate design, trying to see if we can come up with a design that works so we can keep streamlined. But right now, we went with metal on purpose there for a reason. So that's bonded on the bottom of the mast. We actually foam fill our mast, the hollow cavity. We only do that because of noise. The first mast we put in the water had some, you know, we've all experienced, you know, noise from the foil and some vibration from the foil.
Mm-hmm.
And a hollow mast, it was just an amplifier. It was so loud. I remember riding around the hatchery on one of the first masts and people just staring like, what the hell is wrong with you? The thing was just screaming. So noisy.
Huh.
And so we foam fill those, and then we made masts that fit with about any brand. So whatever brand it is that you're buying the mast for, we will bond that and fitting that in the mast. And that's how it ships out the door. We don't have a universal compatible mast. I wish we could, but we cannot come up with a solution that meets our durability requirements without making the mast a lot thicker.
Mm, okay.
To make that work, we have to go to M8 bolts, and to make M8 bolts work, you need to be about right around 18 millimeters thick for the mast. That's just too much drag for us. We're not going to do that. We'd rather compromise in another direction. That's not a compromise we'll make.
Okay, fair enough. So going back to the attachment for the board attachment and stuff, making that out of metal, yep, instead of carbon. Some brands are, obviously everybody's doing every which way, but you're thinking this is the better route right now?
For us right now, it is. Okay. As I said, we've been doing some work on a carbon base attachment, but we're still not happy with where we have to go thickness and size-wise to make it structural.
Mm, okay.
And metal is a pretty straightforward approach to that.
Fair enough, because you would lose stiffness and then drag. Would it be amplified?
If we go small enough to keep the drag down, we're going to lose stiffness. If we make it large enough to get the stiffness where we want to be, the drag goes up.
Okay.
And like I said, again, a lot of people are like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's out of the water. But most of those people that say that don't prone foil or stuff downwind. They did there, feel the difference really quick.
Mm, okay, fair enough.
I mean, you know, if we look at the whole trend in, you know, downwind supports are getting longer and narrower all the time to reduce friction for takeoff. So if you hang something that's really draggy right there on the bottom of the board in the back, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, no, especially if you're looking to shave anywhere you can possibly shave. Well, yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. So then, and then you make all the custom mast adapters so that you can hook that up to most major brands, you were saying?
Most major brands. I don't know if we do everything because it seems like there's a new brand coming out every week. But basically all major brands we have adapters for. And we even do all that work in-house. We don't even send that out. We want to control that. So if we screw it up, it's our fault. And if we need to make an adjustment, we can make it quickly. Again, that'd be a place we could save money easily having those pieces all made in Asia. But again, we'd rather do it all ourselves, keep it in-house and do it right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, and continue the Made in USA is nice. At least then you know, and it's a dependable product, so we're not going to get worried as much because stuff is slowly like with new composite wings, they're rising in prices. So I think what's going to happen is people are just going to get used to spending a bit more, and they're going to want. I like something made close to home that I know I can depend on. That's important to me.
And also to us, it's just keeping jobs in the U.S. You know, it's important to keep people employed. That's a big reason for all this is to give people jobs and give them a way of having a family wage, and you can buy a house and have a family and feel good about life, you know, and do good things that people enjoy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is there anything you can share about what's coming in the future that you think changes in how things are going or how building might change?
I'm hoping to get more comfortable in big waves.
Okay. That's good.
Once you get to where about head and a half, double head, it gets kind of sketchy. That probably doesn't affect the rest of you people.
Yeah, no.
Those times where you kind of look back, like, I don't even want to look back. I just got to keep my shit together and not blow up right now.
Oh, shit. I was on the Great Lakes, 2 weeks ago? And we had 2 days where it blew through the night. So it was about, it must have been.
That can get some waves,
yeah. Yeah, it was like 6-7 feet, right? So it was pretty decent overhead. And it was my first time in bigger stuff. Like normally I'm on lakes and smaller things or whatever. So I'm chumming around. Some of the best wind around, but not the biggest swell. So here I am on this stuff. And girlfriend was out there with me. And I'm like, hey, did I turn? Should no, you just straight line that thing. And here I am breathing. Okay, you got this, man. You got this. And just focus. And I look back and I was like, I thought I was turning, but I said, from this amateur level to pro level where they're turning like on critical sections of the wave and like some of this new stuff where there's crazy barreling. And I was like, okay, you guys are where you're at. You put in a lot of time and dedication to get there.
It's impressive seeing what's going on out there. It's really impressive. And it's interesting when you go out on a wave day and just the level of people you see out there. People that are just like some straight lining around the wave, just trying not to die. And then other people on the next to us, way behind it, way bigger wave, just right in the pocket, right in the pit, just ripping it. And I think that's awesome. That's what I'm hoping we get to.
Have you seen
pushing more critical all the time.
You've obviously seen a big change in Maui, right? With the from 90% windsurfing to 90% winging now?
Well, I mean, I'd say it's 90% kiting.
Okay.
To probably more like probably about 30 to 40% wingers now.
Wow. Big jump.
Ka'a, which used to be strictly kite beach, you will see maybe if there's one or two kites on that beach any given day, it's shocking there. There's still a lot of windsurfers. I think the median age of the windsurfer over here is probably about 7 or 8.
Still, though, it's impressive.
It's impressive to see these people out there. I mean, I was out probably about 3 weeks ago on a pretty big day at Uppers. I mean, it was overhead high at Uppers, and there's a couple windsurfers out there, and one of the guys out there windsurfing, I talked on the beach later, she was 68, and she's out there getting after it. I mean, in the criticals, I think over, like, that's awesome. I mean, I'm 60, so I'm not too far behind her, but I'm still pretty damn stoked to see that. I got a few more years, maybe.
Oh, yeah. So, for sure you will.
But, yeah. But the progression's been interesting over here. I think the progression I've seen in the Gorge has been more interesting to me, though. Because being over here, things are progressing very quickly over in Maui. And I went back to the Gorge. I'm like, oh, my God, no one back here has a clue what they're doing. And, I go out the hatchery, and there'll be like two or three people winging on the hatchery, and talked to Ed Winsor-Vatry and other guys there didn't give me a hard time about it, but I actually felt like I knew what I was doing. I had no clue what I was doing winging, but then the next summer I go back, like, people got a lot better. And then this summer I'm back there and people are just ripping in the Gorge now. So the progression I saw in the Gorge was very accelerated compared to what I saw in Maui, but it took a few years here for people to really start pushing things in the waves.
Fair enough.
And as you know, I mean, the whole downwinding thing is just huge. And I think that's actually one of the bigger progressions I've seen in the Gorge is how many people are downwinding there now. It's just a perfect easy place to downwind.
Oh, yeah. It's phenomenal for that.
Where, Whereas, you know, here in Maui, you're a mile and a half, 2 miles offshore doing that. So something goes south, it's not good.
Yes.
Whereas in the gorge, you're never more than half a mile from shore anywhere. So
yeah, that's true. It's not as bad of a swim. Even if you get drifted down somewhere or up or whatever, it's not a huge deal.
No, you can always climb up the rock somewhere and you'll get out and hitch a ride with somewhere. So
focusing on R&D, obviously you've gotten the chance to see a lot over your pretty cool career doing this stuff. Who's given you good feedback or R&D for your winging mass?
There's been a lot of people involved, especially the V2. The V2 was actually on the water for the first time in June of 22. And we didn't release it to the public until June of 23. That kind of goes back to more our windsurfing roots, that we would test something to death before we released it. That was not the case with the V1 because people would need them so quickly. We didn't. That was a little bit earlier, quicker release. But yeah, V1 or V2, tons of testing. Kane DeWall has been fantastic. A lot of great data from Kane. Probably one of the most sensitive people there is to changes to any piece of gear.
Mm-hmm.
He is constantly testing. I mean, you see him at the beach or make two or three rounds, come in, tweak something, two or three rounds. You never see him go out for a long session. He's always just constantly tweaking.
Oh, wow.
And always trying new gear. So he was super helpful in that development. Mr. Bennett, fantastic feedback from him. We got some of the early mass to him. He really liked how they felt, wanted a little more stiffness, so we had a lot of stiffness tuned with him. Couple of gentlemen in the gorge I can't name because they ride for, they're fully sponsored team riders for other people.
Okay.
But we have a couple of gorge guys that got us a lot of good feedback early on also. Those were a lot of early dawn patrol sessions, so people didn't see what they're on, and even to the point of disguising masks for them if we needed to. We did that as well here in the gorge, or here in Maui with a couple of people. Who else? Casey Hauser early on. He did some good things for us. Hopefully Casey's doing well. He's recovering from some ugly shit.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely got some good feedback to us on V2 as well. Really helped us out there. So
awesome.
And then from there, I pretty much would be at the beach with V2s any day there was any wind. And if I could get somebody to test it and take it out, I would.
Okay.
And I would frequently, especially if you got later in the process, really down in stiffness, I was looking for people that were more beginner to intermediate wingers to do some testing to make sure we weren't going too far. I mean, too stiff and too tweaky. From my history in windsurfing, I know that windsurfing kind of hurt itself because they made the sport too technical and not obtainable to the general public. So I want to be very careful with that with V2, that we didn't make those masks so high a performance that somebody that's just learning couldn't ride it, enjoy it, you know?
What would that relate to performance to?
If a mask gets too stiff, it can just be too reactive.
Okay.
It won't dampen any movement of anything. And which, if you know how to wing, at first you got it, it's like, oh, kind of a little sketchy, pitchy, this and that. But for about two runs, you're like, oh man, I really like this. But some of it's a beginner to early intermediate, you're not going to be able to get on top of that pitchiness and that sensitivity that quickly. And so that was a concern we had. And we actually built a couple masks that were over the line. They were so stiff that they were hard to control. Because it was any little turbulence in the water would just knock things all over the place.
Oh yeah, I forgot about turbulence too.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot more of that over here in Maui than a lot of places. Because we have a lot of a lot of things on the ocean floor all over the place, and water's moving up and down sideways. It's not just nice calm water flowing one direction. There's a lot of vertical movement of the water over here frequently.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A lot of testing we did at uppers was because of that. Uppers in Naha has just tons of big boil rocks, all this stuff that, I mean, you can see a wave go through and just see this big bubble boil on the surface from when this wave's going over. There's a lot of vertical movement there. And if things are too stiff, it can be kind of a handful. you're definitely standing on the beach ball that's out of control at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can just watch. Yeah, watch the 75-year-old windsurfers rip it up, I guess.
Yeah, which still good.
Absolutely. Okay, so R&D was then, those are some pretty fantastic riders that are helping out with that. So they would come up, ride something, let you know. How does it go from there to development? Because obviously you're not making a series, a series of custom masks, right? How does that process work?
Oh, we did a lot of custom masks. Yeah.
Okay.
We would make something, tweak it. You know, again, being that we do our own manufacturing.
Oh, yeah.
If we want to change something, it's like, you know, you give us feedback at 9 in the morning about something you didn't like. 3 in the afternoon, we're sending you on the next iteration to test. Yeah. So there's a lot of tweaking. We'd change lifts, we'd change materials, change angles, this and that. We're constantly changing things and dialing things in. And that was a big part of it. And, you know, we probably went through, I don't know, 25, 30 iterations of V2 before we finally set on the release.
And what's your release cycle? Because I know I was talking to Keith up in Maui there, and they were on like a 2 or 3 year cycle on some stuff. What do you guys do?
We don't.
Okay.
We kind of look at what we have and if we need to improve it or not.
I guess that's what he said too.
We're constantly making tweaks.
Okay.
We're constantly improving things slightly. Since V2 released, we've actually gone to using forgings for our base fittings instead of just machining them out of big blocks of aluminum. And that's something we've been working on for a while. It just took us a long time to get a company to make the forgings to our quality. When you forge metal, you actually push it and flow it. So by doing that, we're able to get actually even more strength up through the taper of that forging, through the base tray.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just one of those things we've been wanting to do for a long time, but we finally got a company making good forgings for us and meeting our requirements. So the current shipping V2s have now a forge base fitting instead of a purely machine one.
Oh, cool.
So we're constantly making little tweaks. Little things are changing all the time.
So you just, as you make them, then the next shipment will go out slightly different?
Yep.
Oh.
Go out slightly, you know, just, if we make little improvements, we do. There's not any major block changes.
Okay.
And that's true. That's true in the entire water sport industry. Just speaking of Keith, and every batch and board they get in are slightly tweaked, slightly improved. They're constantly getting better. You're not going to just sit there, but we're not a product company. We're more of an engineering company. So as we can make improvements, then we'll bring something new to the table. If we can't make something better, we're not just going to come out with something different to come out with something different. That's why the little skinnies are still the same as they've been for a long time.
Look at that beauty. Had so much fun with that thing. But can you explain to me, because I have no idea, why would there be like a wider at the top and it taper down at the bottom where it goes to attach to the foil? Is there a reasoning behind? Obviously, there's reasoning, but Luke doesn't know.
Different people have different theories on that one. If you can do some taper that way, if you taper from fat at the top down to the bottom, less drag underwater from a thinner profile, and then more stiffness up top, so you can get your overall mass is stiffer. You still have more bending down low than up high, but it gives you a little bit of stiffness. There's some people that think there's some hydrodynamic benefits of the tapering mast. That one, I'm not convinced on that. The thousands of pages of testing that the Navy has done have not shown that. That's for sure. And if you look at America's Cup, they're not tapering their struts either. So there's a lot of, I think that's just or congesture. The reason we actually have some taper in our mast is mostly to make it easier to manufacture, to be honest. Our V1 was dead straight. As I mentioned, we have an inner tool and an outer tool. Getting that inner tool out was a pain in the butt because it was dead straight. By putting just a little bit of taper in, then once it moves, we can pop it off easier. So part of our taper in the mast is actually help with manufacturability as well. The bigger thing for us was we wanted to keep it thin as much as possible. A lot of the industry talks about how, you should be right on the top third of the mast or top quarter of the mast, and that's where they worry about the hydrodynamics of it and all that stuff. I'm not that good. I try to ride at the top of my mast, but I'm not that good.
Yeah.
And I'm frequently bearing my mast to my board even at times. And, you know, I want something that's not draggy as soon as I drop in the water. It's going to, you know, slow down a bit, but I don't want to be noticeable. And, I mean, even just going out, you know, when you're going out through wave sets, you're going from very little mass in the water to the whole mass in the water to try to punch over the top of a wave, you know? Unless you're crazy and you're jumping all that stuff. But since I have a bad titanium knee, I'm not allowed to jump, so can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, a big part of it is also keep the whole mast as thin as possible, not have a big blob up top that's slow and draggy, and then just thin down bottom. It also goes back to the pro and surfers and the sub guys just on takeoff. The more drag in the water, the harder it is to get, you know, get up to speed and get out of the water.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So. And are there, can we talk a little bit about the different kinds of carbon that you can use? Like, I've heard some brands are making foils with ultra high modulus. Is that readily available, or is that?
Okay, we're doing a carbon lesson for the geeks in the room here. Yeah. There's many different strengths and stiffnesses of carbon fiber. What's known as standard modulus carbon fiber is about a 33 million psi modulus fiber, 33 MSI fiber. That's kind of your standard modulus carbon. Some people call that high modulus because it is a very high modulus compared to something like fiberglass, which is 8 or 10. So some people are even called a standard modulus carbon fiber high modulus. So a lot of it's marketing crap you got to be careful of.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, in the aerospace industry, you have standard modulus, which is 33 MSI, what's called intermediate modulus fibers, which are usually about 40, 42, maybe 44 MSI. You get into high modulus fibers, which are, again, aerospace, or 50 to 55 MSI. And then you get into what's known as pitch materials, which are ultra-high moduluses, which can be up to 110, 112 PSI. So very, very high. So the industry itself, I know a lot of people that are saying they use high modulus fiber now, and very few are saying what that actually means.
Okay.
So it's kind of a, I don't know what I buy there. The no limits masts, we're doing those. Most of that mast is made of a high modulus of 52 MSI fiber. We are using some 110 MSI fiber in there as well. Both those materials are material we use consistently all the time for aerospace parts. So for us, it's the material we have it in stock, it's easy, and we frequently actually are able to cut patterns for mass out of waste material from military hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're actually using material that would have been scrapped otherwise, which is nice. So some green resource to this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of the whole story here. I do know one brand that was claiming they were using M55J fiber, which is about a 68 or 70 MSI fiber. And I know that's absolute BS because we do a lot of work with M55J for satellite programs, and it's a heavily controlled fiber. If the program we're working on does not have a government rating tied to it, we can't get the fiber. We can't even buy it. It's only sold for military programs and high-level programs. So somebody's saying they're making mass out of that, that's, if they are, they're probably going to go into federal pen soon because I don't know how they're getting in the jail. So,
because it's a resource that they can't overuse, I'm assuming. Is that why? Or?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a limited resource.
Okay.
There's very little of that fiber actually made, and limited resource, so it must go to the right programs.
Mm. Okay.
But I am aware of one of the companies using some 110 MSI fiber as well. Because there's some 110 MSI fibers that are affordable out there. And by affordable, I mean they're $100 a pound. So they're not cheap, that's for sure.
Okay.
So,
and for those of us who don't know how that applies to making a good mast.
The stiffer the fiber, the stiffer the mast.
Okay.
You know, pretty straightforward there. But the issue also with the really stiff fibers is they're usually pretty weak. Their strength goes way down. So as their stiffness goes up, their strength reduces. And so you have to balance your strength with your stiffness.
Okay.
If you're making a solid mast, a solid laminate like most masts are out there, you don't really worry about strength because you're basically building a, you know, baseball bat of a mast. So you can use weaker fibers and get by with it and use higher modulus fibers that way. In our case, we're making a very light mast, very thin-walled. We have to really balance our strength and our stiffness. That's why we use a combination of high modulus, pretty high strength fiber, and some ultra high modulus fiber that's really weak, actually. But it's stiff. So we use it very selectively where we need the stiffness.
Because you guys were just showcasing that one as one of the lighter masts out there. So strength and light.
I think we're by far the lightest, actually.
Oh, good for you.
We wanted to make a light mast because the way the mast does matter. Again, this is something people will say it doesn't matter, but it's all mast you have to accelerate. It's all mast you have to change direction with. So the lighter it is, the easier it is to work. And, you know, again, windsurfing spends a massive amount of effort making really light boards because they sail better. And same thing with the foil. I mean, I'm riding a sub-10-pound foil board right now that's just spectacular. It's a little bit larger board, but it's so light, it's just so whippy. It feels like I'm riding a 35-liter board, even though it's about a 75-liter board.
Can you mention to us what that is?
George Foster.
Okay.
He's a custom builder here in Maui.
Oh, nice.
And I've worked with George on construction some, and we've thrown some new ideas around and making some really light boards, and they work well. And so, yeah, so to me, you know, keeping mass out of all this stuff's really important. I mean, like my full up gear, my board, wing foil, mass, all that stuff weighs less than some, you know, a lot of those boards, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Let alone with their foil on it.
Oh, yeah.
And the lighter it is, the faster it gets up foil and jumps out of the water and goes.
It's true. And the easier it is to, yeah, when you do your walk of shame.
Yes, easier. I did a big one of those just 2 weeks ago. New personal best.
Oh, shit.
That was a big walk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you wear like an Apple Watch or any kind of GPS watches and stuff when you're out in Maui? Or I've seen that increase lately.
No, I'm not smart. No. I'm not smart enough to do this.
I want to get one.
I don't want people to know how far I had to walk home.
Hey, honey, it wasn't a long walk today, but it was really fun.
Oh, it wasn't a fun one. That was a bad day.
Shit.
That was a day that was very light.
Okay.
One of those days, it's like, if I fall off foil, I'm probably screwed.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I guess that happens there.
It happens here a lot, especially when you're chasing waves, and the waves are good, and you stay out there longer than you should as the wind starts to shut down just because the waves are good, and you're like, okay, if I fall off foil, I'm screwed, but it's too good.
Okay, go ahead.
Just don't fall.
So what you're telling me is that feeling of getting the next one never goes away.
Just one more.
Just one more all the time.
Yep.
Nice.
Just one more.
Nice. I had something, but I blanked. What was I going to say?
Actually, it's funny with the just one more statement.
Yep.
That was literally the last wave I was catching that I saw long.
Oh, yeah? Oh, shit.
I was riding and somebody yelled at me and I looked back like, oh, who was that? And I looked back and I was like, oh, hey. And just I looked back and I turned around and I fall out. So I'm like, oh, God, no. Yeah. That then turned into an hour of paddling and a long walk back.
Oh, yeah. Was that, you got dragged under for that, did you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a few beatings on that day. Yep. Like, I came at a pier one. So, yeah, it was a long walk.
Fair enough. Have you tried downwinding?
Downwind sup?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'd set a goal for myself. That's what I was going to work on this summer in the gorge. And then we had the wildfires in the gorge that changed my priorities this summer. So I have not tried that yet. I'm looking forward to trying to see if I can learn that skill and embarrass myself for a while.
Well, maybe because I was talking to Alex there and he said he'd give me a tour of the factory. So maybe, yeah, I'll do that next year. I'd love to try that out too. Because I got to demo your foil with an mast with an F1 foil at AWSI this year. And yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah, it was
good.
Yeah, because there was three or four, a couple of pros that I recognized there, and it was like shoulder high swell that day at event site. And with that current, you just keep riding and riding and riding.
Oh, you can go. Yeah.
Unreal.
I see why the people that do it are really addicted to it. I mean, here in Maui, it's crazy. The days that, you know, we go for wing down winders, I feel like I'm the only winger out there anymore. It's just a constant stream of guys on surfboards just sliding behind you.
So where are they starting? Like Hokipa, kind of that area, and just starting down there?
No, mostly starting Maliko, which is just past Hokipa. Okay. Mostly Maliko Gulch.
Okay.
And they go from there down to either Kanaha or all the way down the harbor.
Okay. But they have to go out how far, you were saying? Like a kilometer?
Most of the guys are doing that stuff for riding about a mile and a half, 2 miles out.
Oh, like 2 miles. So what is that, like 4K? Whoa.
Yeah, they're out there ways.
Okay.
That's where the big sits and swells are. That's where those guys go out to.
Okay. Now, what does big mean in Maui, Hawaii terms?
Well, there's some days out there that you're definitely, you know, head and a half swells rolling.
Mm. Okay.
So, you know, 3 to 4 meter swells you're rolling on. I've dropped down on weight. I'm just scared to death. It's like, oh my God, don't blow up. You're just, because they're big, long ramps. You're just going a million miles an hour. It's not like a big wave where you're working the face of it. It's just like, hang on for dear life. Here we go.
Yeah, that's when you got to breathe deeply and focus.
Or crash and knock the wind out of yourself and not breathe at
all. Yeah, that's true. That happens too. Well, for people who are looking to buy a foil and it's going to come with whatever mast comes with it, I guess, is there anything that you can say, anything that you can recommend that would open the door to you getting a little more beer at $8 a beer now?
You know, I don't think there's a brand out there that's forcing you to buy their mast with their foil at this point. I think they're selling everything separate. There's some brands out there, I'm not going to name brands who does good and bad, but there's some that make good masks, some that make not so good masks. And most people can find that out with a pretty quick Google search.
Yeah.
And a little bit of time on some forums. And, you know, we're making masks for a lot of brands, and we're doing them because, you know, people want higher performance and something lighter and stiffer. There's also some compatibility things you can do with our masks. Jim Stringfellow, Stringy Parts, he makes a lot of adapters that work with our masks. So if you get one of our masks with like a Takuma 3-hole on it, you can then also buy adapters for Lift and F1 and Axis and on. So you can make our one mask work with multiple brands if you want to play with multiple brands. And so there's some options there as well. And I will say that the people I have the most respect for in this industry are the ones I see on the beach testing all the time. And those are the guys that I have a huge amount of respect, because they're out there working. They're out there on the water themselves doing it. You know, Alex with Neil Gofol, you see him at the beach constantly testing boards, foils, wings, everything. And, you know, those type of people, they're putting the time in, they're working hard. And, you know, I have a huge amount of respect for that.
And it's such an art too, that's hard. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And it's hard, and everything acts differently. And then, you know, if you're not out there riding it yourself, I'm not going to really pay attention to your designs. So.
Fair enough.
And there's a lot of different disciplines also, and that's another big part of this. And Alex is one of those guys, he does basically all the disciplines. Pretty cool. You see him out there, you know, in the waves upwinding, see him out winging, see him downwinding. You know, he's doing all the stuff. It's really cool. And, you know, Dave Klum is another guy out there doing all the disciplines all the time, always testing. I have a huge amount of respect for those guys.
Yeah, that's a lot of time.
And they're the ones driving things.
Yeah.
Oh, it? Yeah, that's our lives, and it's awesome. Yeah, I still have to spend most of my time designing satellites and rockets, so I only get to play when I get a chance. But
fair enough.
I definitely try and put in the time of the water testing, making sure I know what our gear is doing. And I ride a lot of other people's gear, too. I ride a lot of other foils, a lot of other masks. I'm one of those guys, if somebody offers me their stuff on the beach, I'll be in the water before they can think about whether they should offer me their stuff on the beach. I'm like, yep, I'll try it. Heck yes.
Yeah, and then bring that stuff. Yeah, just see what that ride's like, get your ideas from. Okay. Now, for different disciplines, are there different masks that will be made or that you do make custom for certain athletes that will perform better for their stuff?
We are not going on that path yet. You know, different disciplines, you know, shorter masks for prone, longer masks for, you know, maybe windsurf foiling or winging or kiting, that type of thing, kite foiling. We did most of our R&D based on a stiff enough mast, a 93 centimeter length that works well. We were a little bit nervous about whether that would be too stiff at 72, but it still works fine at 72.
Chat.
Yeah, we could make a slightly less stiff mat at 72. It still worked fine, but do we need to do that to pull another, you know, 50 grams or 100 grams on the mast? Probably not worth the effort. And so we haven't gone there yet. I could see that happening in the future, though. As things get more and more specialized, I could see that happening.
Okay.
But we're trying to keep it, some of the sports still simple. Yeah. Like, you know, all boards have the same fin box. Let's keep something standard, okay?
Yeah, that's true. Well, Steve,
it'd be nice.
Is there anything else you'd like to chat about? I certainly got to learn a little bit more about masks, which was pretty exciting. And
yeah, it's anything at all. I mean, we're out there having fun, just trying to push the sport. So, not much more to add from there. It's you know, we keep doing things, we keep innovating as we can, and it's fun being part of the sport right now because it's just growing so fast.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I probably two to three times a week I see some brand new piece of gear I've never seen before at the beach. Yeah, it's really kind of cool.
Oh yeah, you're at the Mecca. Is there anything you can pop out of the, let us know what you've seen? I'm always curious what's coming out of that place.
Actually, I just saw one of the new Axis masks. It's kind of a backwards airfoil. And that I thought was really cool. A good friend of mine is Paul Beaker, and he's one of the lead hydrodynamicists for Team Oracle for America's Cup.
Okay.
And I've talked to him quite a bit about, you know, mass design, all that stuff, what we're doing. And he told me if we're going just a little bit faster, or actually be better to use a triangle from what the research has done, but we're not going fast enough for that yet. So seeing that mass that Axis has done, it's kind of a reverse wedge type shape. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I'm looking forward to actually trying. I'm hoping to get on that here this coming week.
Okay.
I should try that out. I'm hoping to try it.
Yeah, let me know.
I thought that was pretty cool. But that is cool. Some new foils I've seen are pretty interesting. I don't think the public's going to see them for another year plus. But just some of the foils are going has been pretty interesting. I rode a little 750 about a week and a half ago that I swear it had more lift than my 980. I could not believe I was riding that small of a fall because of how much lift it had, and just really fast and really fun turning thing. So it's constantly evolving.
Yeah, I guess so. That must be pretty fun, eh? To be able to see all that. And
I'd just be happy if I get my hands on some hand wings, because I'm kind of gear limited right now, which is sad.
What are you riding hang wing wise?
Anything anybody gives me right now, because I have none.
Okay.
I lost a couple this summer because of the fire. And then I kind of had a bad day at Uppers about a month ago, and my beloved 3.5 F1 Strike version 1 became a 1.75.
Wow, no.
Completely tore it in half.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's, and I've been trying to find a new Strike V1. I can't find those.
Other one, I have one. I have a 4.2.
Really? What's up?
Yeah. Arkansas.
Awesome. We can talk.
All right, we'll talk in the gorge. Yes.
but yeah, so I'm just speaking kind of funny that way. But I have been testing some of the Armstrong stuff. The new Armstrong wings are fantastic, in my opinion. I was really impressed with those. But again, I'm a wave guy, so all I'm worried about is something that just disappears in the wave world. It has good punch to get me out when I fall between sets.
Okay.
So my discipline is a lot different than other people's disciplines.
Do you like a wing because the Strike just sits there in the pocket? It doesn't
The Strike
move
V1
too much.
Just, yeah, just, boom.
It just stays.
Yeah. The okay. V3 is like, oh, and I don't like that. I want it to stay. I want it to disappear.
Okay.
That's kind of my thing.
again, like I said, I'm chasing waves, so I'm very specific discipline for what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, fair
enough. I'm kind of happy to see F1 kind of coming out with stuff. They're starting to separate into different disciplines. I was happy when I saw F1 doing that. You know, first with their skate quals, where actually guys that wanted to just were more surfy, and now with their new swing that came out, which is kind of more focused on the wake round. So, but I can't find a swing V3 anywhere to even put my hands on. So,
yeah, they make good stuff for learning. I think they're one of the top. I love those wings. That's what I learned on. I got other family members have them too, and yeah, they're amazing.
And I, like I said, I just like something goes away. So
fair enough.
But yesterday I was riding an old wing I have, an old V1 Wasp. And I remember why that has not been blown up in 3 years.
Sorry, Wasp.
it was just the biggest bag that did nothing except for make my arms sore. It was horrible. I'm like, oh God. Okay, throw that thing away.
Well, the Nash V1s were of that... I remember one of our buddies on the island got one and he was so excited. I'm going to go out and learn in 12 knots. And I was like, no, you're not. And he's like, yes, I am. And he comes back to the beach. He's like, can I grab your F1? I said, yeah, here. They're good in 30 plus. Like when it's powered.
Yeah, they're great overpowered.
They're great. Yeah, absolutely amazing overpowered. But it's just that I was fascinated by that, how certain brands came out with wings with, I guess it's the same as those little, the old like Super Nintendo games and stuff, and even Nintendo games before. Like you could pick your car, and some had good steering and high end and low end and all that. I related to that. There's no bad wing. It just depends what you want to do with it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, but yeah, it's, I mentioned Ken Ware is a good friend of mine. Well, I ride a lot of stuff for him, a lot of, you know, test a lot of stuff for him. And I'm amazed at how well those duotones go upwind. How fast they are, how stable they are. They're insane. I was like, this is nuts. But it doesn't behave the way I want a wing to behave for the waves. Because they do have that, though. Okay, here we go. And
a little bit of sway.
I want to strictly be focused on that wave, not what the wing's doing.
Yeah, fair enough. Because when you're getting into like Great Lake swell or smaller lake swell, like we get in the island, I like that because it helps initiate my turns and I'm trying to be more quick and snappy because that's what I'm getting. So I can do that, but I can see that because I used the Strike V1 this summer and I went to tack and it was still sitting in the other area where I wanted it
to
move.
That's classic Strike V1, yeah.
It's like, it doesn't follow me around in that way, but as we said, it doesn't matter. It's based on that. So,
yeah, I had a good friend tell me, oh, yeah, strike V1, you have to like do the baseball flick with the rear hand to get it actually go where you want to go. If you don't do the little baseball flick, it stays over there. It doesn't care.
Yep. Definitely experienced that. But I guess we've covered a ton. And is there anything else specific that you think somebody at home should know? Probably not. We covered
not
it.
On my side, no. I had nothing specific anyway. I'm just rambling. So.
No, that was good rambling. It's an honor to talk to you. Especially,
and there's not enough wind out there for me to get antsy, so it's okay.
Oh yeah, fair enough. And here in the East Coast, we have had 2 days in 3 weeks. I'm waiting on my next session. Water just got cold too. So
well, it's good. It gives you more flotation.
Yeah, that's true. Salt
that
gives
big
a bit
dry
of flotation.
Suit on.
Old 6x4 with the holes, and then I got this 2-mil shirt, and then I'm starting to think, you know, there's warmer places in the world, eh? Like Maui's not far away. Mexico's
pretty
nice.
There's also newer wetsuits in the world too than that, okay?
See, they tear. You know, these seasonal limits masks, they don't break. At least I know I'm safe with that, but these wetsuits, they don't hold up.
No, they tear. See, again, they're smart. They make sure you buy a new one every couple of years.
Yeah, that's it. So I guess what we can say is you got to keep the support train going. But anyway, I just want to say on behalf of everybody, like, thanks for doing this. You didn't necessarily have to. And just looking back at this, I think that's so cool to be able to talk to you with that whole history and contributed to a heck of a lot of fun out there for a lot of people. That's pretty awesome.
We have to have fun. That's for sure. You have to have good toys to play with because we don't have much time to play. So,
yeah, that's true.
I never liked to swim back in the windsurfing days. To me, it's like I, especially when I was, windsurfing in the Midwest, same thing. It's so few good days. You get 3 or 4 good days a year. If you break your gear one day, it's like there goes 25%, 33% of your sailing for the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to break gear. I always want to make sure you have gear you trust.
Yeah, actually. And that's why I just had Omen foils on.
Yeah.
And yeah, they make, you make their masts. So that was pretty cool talking to them. And they get their boards are manufactured by Apple Tree. So another kind of cool liaison. And,
yeah, Winger's making the boards for them.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there are some good guys. I like those guys. Winger, I like the only guys, the good guys.
Yeah.
They're making some nice foils. That's some fun stuff.
Yeah, when I get back to Vic there in the spring, he's going to take me, we're going to do some prone, and also just nice. I'm gonna demo that thing and see how that feels like. Because they're using stainless steel. Mixture of that plus carbon.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got some interesting things going on there with the structure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that closer.
Yeah. Yeah, we do the mass for them. We do a couple other bits for them. Yeah. It's been a fun partnership getting some of that stuff for them. And they definitely benefited from all of our year plus of effort on the V2.
Well, that's the thing. And that's exactly what he said, because it's like I said, these guys are running such a high quality product as manufacturers. And then why not want to form a relationship with them and then help bring that product out? Like, it makes sense for companies. Definitely makes sense. And then, you're not, I guess your business model grows, and then obviously more and more companies do that, then you can, that'd be okay.
The rec side of our business, we've always looked at it as some way just to keep people busy when they have nothing else to do.
That's cool.
We do it because we love it. We don't do it to make a buck in the rec side, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. So making satellites, and what else is your main maker?
Oh, we do some military stuff. We don't do anything that kills people. That's kind of one of my things. I've never been one to build an offensive weapon. I feel that if you're going to kill somebody, you get up close and personal with them and kill them, not do it from 1,000 miles away. But we do some military stuff on the defensive side. We do quite a bit of stuff for an old rocket company down in Southern California that lands rockets that we can't name. We build all the landing assembly, all that thing for them, and a bunch of stuff in the upper side of the rockets.
Some
of the rocket companies we build parts for, hardware and spacecraft. We got some, we got a lot of stuff floating around in space. Some stuff that's landed on other planets, that type of thing. Which is kind of cool to think. It's like, a part that we made is actually on another planet now.
Did you get to Mars?
I can't answer that.
NDA.
Yep, NDAs. But and we do a lot of satellite work. We build a lot of satellite primary structure, which is very intricate, very light little fine detail parts. I mean, some of the parts that we make actually are so delicate that in Earth's gravity, if one G of gravity will actually sell the part if it's held in the wrong direction. It will only survive and do its job in space. It actually won't survive and do its job on Earth. So some of these telescoping boom assemblies have to be tested and suspended with helium balloons. They never feel the pull in the Earth's gravity.
There's so much,
And some of those parts are made with... The most expensive material we use is $8,000 per pound on those little parts. Which is kind of disturbing.
$1,000 a pound.
Per pound,
So highly regulated then.
Very highly regulated, and it's very... And very finicky material. You look at it wrong and it breaks. It's so rigid, so stiff. Very. But that's we do a lot of that stuff. We also do some fun industrial work. Make some things, different. We're across a lot of industries. And like I mentioned before, America's Cup. There's not an America's Cup boat out there in the past 3 go-arounds we don't have hardware on.
Oh, wow.
It's important. So a lot of different things. So we just stay diverse across a lot of industries. And recreation, like I said, we do recreation and keep it fun and keep pushing the industry and, help absorb some overhead, get people stuff to do.
And your rent, obviously, is still $50, so it's not too bad, eh?
Rent, $50. Yeah, no, yeah. That's all changed. Yeah, we actually have, we have a 65,000 square foot facility we built, purpose built just for ourselves up in the woods. We set up in the woods up in White Salmon. So you'll see it next year hopefully when you come out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm going to come to take a tour. That'd be super cool to see.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Be good. Looking forward to it. And if you make it to Maui, you know where to find me or go out and get a sesh.
I might be coming out this winter. We'll see. We'll see if I can organize it. But if so, yeah, that would be super fun. If not, it'll be Hood next year. I wouldn't mind spending a month there. I wouldn't mind spending a month there. It's so close to Vancouver Island. Like,
it is.
So close. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
In summers, it's hard to beat that place in summer. It's so, so beautiful. So much fun.
Yeah. When does the current slow down? Is that June, July kind of thing? Or because September was so cruisy. It was insane. Like,
it
hardly
depends.
None.
I mean, they control the currents heavily there because of the fish runs.
Oh, yeah. Fair
and
enough.
They will, the currents will change based on the fish runs. You know, May, June is always high current because we have so much snowmelt, they have to get rid of it. But then, you know, June, July, August, September, they kind of control the runs based on what's going on with the fish. If there's many fish movement, they put more water through. If there's not, they hold the water back.
Okay. Fair enough.
One of the good reasons for dams.
Yeah. 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 I guess so. I guess so.
And all the power they generate. That's a whole other story, though. Yeah.
Yeah. We can talk. We can talk about that next time when your V3 comes out.
There we go.
Cool.
By then, we may all just be living on some other power source. You never know.
Yeah. Or maybe Mars. Guess we'll have to see what happens.
There's no lakes on Mars. That's what I'm not happy about right now. Yeah.
I know. No lakes, no wind. Oh, there might be wind, but there'd be no lakes.
Oh, there's lots of wind. Lots
of
wind on
Mars.
There'd
be no lakes.
Yeah, no lakes.
Yeah. No, that would not be fun then.
Yeah.
Hmm. Have you sailed up on Vancouver Island or up the
Mars.
Coast there? No. Not Mars it?
Not Mars. I've not sailed Vancouver Island. I've sailed up the Washington coast, once I've up that, and Oregon coast.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
all
a couple cool lakes.
Cold spots.
Yeah, well, there's Nitnat is, I guess, one that can mention. It's pretty warm in the summer, 3.2, 4.3 kind of thing. And it's just a fan. It's not huge chop, but you're in this old growth rainforest and you get to like rip around. It's pretty special.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. We had a couple spots in the woods where you can make these little kitchens and kind of, they're completely removed. It used to be full kind of remote off-grid camping. Now it's changed a little bit. It's a lot more regulated. But for a few years, you would pull up, do this path through the woods, hope to not get eaten by a cougar because it's pretty much North America's cougar capital. And you just sit up there and then you'll see like 50, 60 guys first thing in the morning ranging from 20 all the way up to 70. As soon as they see that first line of wind because there's a thermal, everybody's sticking their heads out. Pretty cool. So it's definitely a cool spot. And if you're ever in the area, let me know. Be fun to get you out there.
Fun.
That'd be pretty sweet.
It'd be cool to see.
Different kind of riding. It's super crazy, but the wind is just, if it's gusting more than one knot, people complain. It's a
fan. I think yesterday was from 6 to 24.
Ooh. How long did the 6 last?
A time is long enough that it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah, okay.
Stay on the bump, otherwise you're off foil.
Whoa, okay.
Yep.
And then you got what, chicken jibe? Or what happens if you're getting close to a set and it's starting to... You just dive under, obviously. But then
dive under with that wing. That'll work. No, it's pretty much, you're just... If there's a big set, this guy kicking, you have to just either try to get over the shoulder or you jibe on it and go.
Okay.
So... Yeah,
fair enough. Even if you don't want to,
if it's doing this and big, I want it anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. Even like, what happens if there's no wind and your board's on the water, and you're just like chugging out? I guess you could turn. You could flat water. You could flat water jibe and then try to pump and then catch it. It's so pitchy, you'd kick it. Yeah. Okay.
Going with it, it's not too bad. If you can keep your shit together and just kind of stay forward on the board, you can take off in those waves without any wind, but you need to be prepared for the consequences if you screw that motion up, that whole move up.
Yeah, that's one thing. That's one thing my brother and I practice a ton is super light wind, dry jibing, like when you're on the water and just jibing around and around. I was telling some guys, because I'm back in Ottawa for a little bit, And there was some guys that were saying, like, you're going out in pretty light wind and you can't get up and this and that, and that's not worth it. And it's like, well, it's not for today. If I'm in slightly bigger swell, even on like Ontario, other spots, and it doesn't, and I need to turn around, like all these little pieces, I think, because exactly what you're talking about now, if you want to go out and have fun in those conditions, for beginners, it's all that stuff. Like, it's not a waste of time. Like, none of that stuff is a waste of time.
And I cannot flatwater jive to save my butt. It's something I've been working on recently for that very reason. Because when you're just sitting there slogging, chugging, it's like, I need to go get the sink turned around quickly. And I can do it on a board that floats, but on a sinky board.
I was going to ask what size, and was it sinking or not? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm running, about 75, and I weigh, 90 kilos. So it's sinky.
Minus 20.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be. Huh. How do you water start that thing?
I can get on top of it and get moving. A little bit of a puff, I can go.
Okay. So. Knee start or?
Knee start, yeah.
Knee start, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, hey, Steve, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, sharing all that with us. And
hopefully it's interesting to somebody out there.
I think it'd be interesting to a lot of people. Yeah, definitely. Since the V2 just came out and there's a lot of people talking about it. So thanks for sharing all that, how it was made, and then going into some of the history as well. Pretty cool.
Yeah, happy to.
Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for joining us tonight. And next time we have Steve on, maybe we'll talk about the V3. All right.
Sweet. Cool. Thanks, Luke.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.